are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Rachel Krieger, and you are listening to another episode of the Last Word Soccer Club Radio Podcast. We are coming at you, time of recording, decently late on the East Coast, about 10 p.m. We start recording on July 28th, so you fine listeners will be probably hearing this on July 29th. It is Friday. Everybody celebrate that. We are brought to you by Roughneck Scarves, Icarus FC, the Beautiful Game Network, and of course, Last Word on Sports Incorporated. I'm not by myself tonight. I am with the New York Red Bulls man who is, we'll be talking about this, licking his wounds. Harvey Cruz, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. I went to work today. I relaxed a bit after what happened the other night, which we'll get to in a bit. I ate tacos today. That's always a fun thing. And they had, for some reason, taco place that we go to, they don't give just like the sauces, but they give these like mini bags of like chopped onions, chopped tomatoes, and chopped peppers all together. Oh, it's the best. It's the best. Yeah, there's nothing like a load, loading a taco with not only sauce, but like extra veggies on top of it as well. Best.
Okay, well, we're twinning because I also had tacos today too.
Yeah,
but I have a really, like, I got sick probably like I think 4 years ago now, and I have a really, like, it's so bad, like I can't have any spice whatsoever, so my tacos are basically just like unseasoned meat and then like onions and lettuce and all of that sauce, all that good stuff, like the non-spicy stuff, because I can't, like, I medically can't eat it. So, but yes, taco Thursday for us, Harvey.
Yep, that's right.
I love it. It's a whole vibe. Folks, this is going to be a short, sweet, and to the point podcast tonight. We have got some Open Cup action to talk about, so we are just going to get right into it. Just going off of the list of what had happened, Harvey, close your ears for a second, because Orlando City SC, not my hometown team anymore because I am back in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, defeated New York Red Bulls in Exploria Stadium 5-1. Yes, you heard that correctly, 5-1, folks. And then later in the night, which actually rolled into, at least for us on the West Coast, that rolled into Thursday morning, Sacramento Republic FC taking on Sporting Kansas City. Everybody really had their eyes on this game, seeing if there would be a cup set, and indeed there was. On penalty kicks, Sacramento Republic won 5-4 on the kicks, and they are heading to Orlando for the finale of the U.S. Open Cup. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup does indeed get a spot in the Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League. So, I mean, it's not something that is taken lightly by teams in the USL, in MLS. Like, these are legitimate games that actually mean something. So Harvey, we're going to go to you first. Tell us about, I know you're going to hate every second of this, but tell us about Orlando City SC and Red Bull New York.
One of the worst nights as a fan that I've had in a long time. And it's one of the worst nights a team has had in franchise history. And I venture to say that's also one of the greatest nights that Orlando City have ever had since making it to MLS. You mentioned it, 5-1. I think if I told you that it would end as 5-1, the way the first half went, you'd probably be laughing at me, because it was chances galore in the first half. Pato missed a sitter from the left side. Patrick Lamala hit the post not once but twice. He hit a bicycle that hit the crossbar. He snuck in a left-footed curler low that nearly beat Gallese. Luquinhos missed the chance when he could have cut it back to Christian Caceres if he saw him. And then one-on-one, he just shot it to side netting, and that was a waste. He also had a header off a nice Lewis Morgan-headed assist. That would have been a goal. But Gallese with an awesome save to save that. It was as wild as it could be. The first half was like 10 shots to 6 in favor of the Rebels. And they played their A lineup after resting most of the team in the wild win at Austin last weekend. And honestly, they were like favorites to win this game because they had already beaten Orlando 3-0 earlier in the season. And they were just, I guess, in better form, given that Orlando has been a bit consistent recently. But Oscar Pereja, and this to me is one of the reasons why Orlando brought him in from FC Dallas, is because he has won this competition before with FC Dallas back in 2016. And so he kind of has the know-how of this. And honestly, I think that if he lost this game, he was going to be on the hot seat because he's been here for 3 years now. He's taking this team to the playoffs. They've underachieved, I guess, in that department. For a team that's brought in guys like Pato and Nani, they're now investing in youth a bit more, bringing guys like Facundo Torres. Cesar Araujo was a beast in this game. 2 goals. And honestly, after Lewis Morgan scored a thumper in the first half, for the Rebels to concede the way they did in set pieces at the end of the first half is a bummer because, first off, set pieces have doomed this team because they're short. They're short in midfield by height, and they really don't win second balls in the air. And so the second phase in which you clear once, but the ball goes back, returns to the area, that's been a struggle for them all season long. And they failed time and time again to try to remedy that. And I think it's just been haunting them. I'm not sure what the solution for that would be. Either you just play a taller midfielder like Daniel Edelman and Drew Yearwood. Who knows? I'm not sure what decision is there. But it was just a backbreaker for the Rebels because the second half was just all Orlando. With Gerhard Struber, I don't know what he told the players at the halftime team talk, but they somehow sold out to try to get a second goal. And by doing so, they left spaces and tons of spaces for Orlando to attack. The Rebels didn't have a shot in the second half. Orlando had 8 shots on target, 8 shots in total in the second half. They were all on target, and they scored with 4 of them. They scored another set-piece goal in the second half, and it was just the worst thing that I can think of from a fan standpoint, where you're in the game going into halftime. You score first, but you can see that at the end of the half, okay, fine, it stinks, but you're still in it. And then you just wilt and you just get flatlined the way you did. And so I did some digging. Because, you know, when you're in this business, you like to like dig and come up with stats and stuff like that. So I did some digging. And before the game last night, the last time that the Rebels conceded 5 goals in a game was the 5-2 loss at NYCFC in November of 2020. Castellanos had a hat trick in that game, but nobody saw it because it was during the pandemic. The last time the Rebels conceded 4 goals in a single half was in Mexico when they played Santos Laguna in the Champions League quarterfinals of 2019. That's how historically bad this was. And it's also the second time they conceded 5 goals to Orlando in their history. Orlando won 5-2 at Red Bull Arena, I believe, in 2015. And I believe Daryl Dike went off in that game. I believe that was when he was still there before leaving to Europe. I believe that was either Daryl Dike or Kyle Larin. Sometimes I forget that those two actually played for Orlando before leaving out to Europe. But nevertheless, I digress. After the game was when the real heat started, because I checked along with my Red Bull Twitter brethren, and all the heat was directed towards Struber, and rightly so, because he, in essence, you could argue more or less cost the Rebels the game. He took off Patrick Lamala with about a half hour to go and brought on Tom Barlow, which has become his favorite thing to do now. It's sort of become tiresome, I guess, for fans because Tom Barlow is not as good skill-wise as Klimala. But for some reason, he just, I don't know if it's just a different tactical look. It's just more legs, whatever, but it didn't work out. He took off Lewis Morgan and then slandered him post-game, saying that he wasn't happy with his defensive effort and that he needed more effort from him, which was weird because I took a look and he took off Lewis Morgan with about 25 minutes to go and the game was already 3-1 at that point. So I'm not sure what he was expecting from that, from that standpoint. And then, of course, you lose a game 5-1. And not just any game, a semifinal game 5-1. And that's just inexcusable. You can't lose a game at that stage of any competition 5-1 and expect to not get some heat for it. And so it's been a real struggle lately. This team has looked gassed. This team has run out of ideas lately. This team, when the press isn't in sync, or when they're just not having a spell of possession that can lead to a chance from open play, they just struggle to create anything and score open play goals. And now they're in a bit of a holding pattern in a way where their fans are wanting them to bring in players. No news has come from the transfer market of them. They play Barcelona at the weekend. We're recording this on the 28th. They play Barcelona on the 30th. And if there's any team in MLS that needs to play an MLS regular season game, it's the Rebels to get rid of that stink of the semifinal loss. So it's one of the worst nights that I've seen this team play in a long time. Fans are pretty much have had it because this was a real chance to win a trophy. Matt Pollard tweeted that he was rooting for the Rebels, which I thank him. But it was a real chance to see this team win a trophy because they essentially put all their eggs in this basket. And they had a real nice path of it. They beat Hartford in Hartford. They beat DC United in DC United. They beat NYCFC at home. And then they just got cracked here in Orlando. So a real bummer, a real, real bummer, because now you want to look forward. They are third in the East, I believe. Let me check that for you real quick. They're third by a point over Montreal in the East, but they're 5 back of MLCFC and they're 6 back of Philadelphia. So it's unlikely they're going to reach the top two. There's still hope that they could host a playoff game in the East, but it's difficult. And the lack of transfer activity, transfer news is just a disappointing vibe at the moment. And losing a game 5-1 is going to turn vibes negative against you real quick. So there's real heat now on this team and on the manager, Struber. And we'll see how they bounce back. But on the flip side, just real quick, a humongous achievement for Orlando City. This was a team that, since coming into MLS, has basically done very little to nothing. Making the playoffs in the past few years under Oscar Pereira has been a godsend for them. One of their executives, Wilf, has said that he wants to build this team right, invest in youth, which is good because, honestly, Orlando's a really decent soccer town. Their fans show up and they have a great they have a great supporter stand as well. So good luck to them. They host the final, which is another real bummer for the Rebels, given that they could have hosted this final. But for Orlando City, good for them, deserved. We'll see how they carry on.
Almost makes me sad that I'm not living an hour and a half from Orlando, that they're hosting the final. I honestly did think about staying for this game, but I was itching to get home. Good stuff, Harvey. Completely agree with everything. And like I had said before, you know, these aren't just games that people should write off because you do have a spot for CONCACAF Champions League on the line. So you do need to take it seriously. So anybody who writes off the Open Cup deserves a swift backhand upside the head. But the other match that had happened, oh man, so many eyes were on this one. Sacramento Republic pull off the cup set, and indeed they did. I have to give a huge shout out to goalkeeper Danny Vitello, used to be a former Pittsburgh Riverhound, so shout out to him for starting in goal and coming up huge for them in their penalty kick shootout. It did go to penalties. There were good chances from both sides throughout the match. Dan Sperry notably tweeting about how bad the camera angles were in the game. I know there was a bit of confusion with camera angles during the Orlando City Red Bull game as well. But from what I watched of the Sporting Sacramento game, it was definitely rough. Sacramento hosted this game. And they send it to penalty kicks. And they, at the end of the day, they just frustrated Sporting Kansas City. Sporting Kansas City has not been the best looking team in MLS this year. They, you know, of course they have their injuries, but also at the same time, you know, we're half a little more than halfway through the season and they are sitting in last place in the Western Conference, something that I don't think anyone on our last word on soccer staff would even think about saying at the beginning of the year. So, Sacramento Republic wins, and shout out to Malik Foster going with the Panenka over Sporting Kansas City goalkeeper. And I'm going to try to not butcher his name, but John Polskamp, he Panenka'd him, he chipped him, whatever you want to call it. It was a slick as can be penalty, and it wasn't even the one that won the game. So the audacity to do that, he celebrated with a backflip. But just, you know, a huge, huge, huge victory for Sacramento Republic. It's one of those that you kind of just have to let the game speak for itself, because, you know, it was entertaining to watch and the penalties were even just as entertaining. And now a USL championship, the USL championship side is going to face an MLS side. I think it's said for the first time since 2008, it might've been 2007, but one of those years, this is the first time in such a long time that we are getting a USL side facing an MLS side in the final. And that's really, really cool to see. It's awesome to see for the growth of the game. And it's, I already saw one of those memes, Harvey, you remember when Rob Lowe was wearing that NFL hat and somebody photoshopped the USL championship logo on it. And I saw New Mexico tweeted it, the Riverhounds tweeted it, and they were all just like, hey, you're representing the USL championship. So pretty cool to see all of those teams coming together to support Sacramento Republic. It is a really good team. They have really good players, and I hope those players are, you know, this is, I mean, you know, Harvey, this could set these players up for moves to MLS. I mean, these guys are, you know, what a spotlight to be on in the Lamar Hunt US Open Cup. And now they're playing against Orlando, and no matter what happens, it's an incredible achievement. You know, it's one of those games that, like, I like Orlando, and I wouldn't even mind seeing Orlando win, but I obviously, like, come on, who isn't going to be rooting for Sacramento that isn't a Orlando City fan, who isn't a neutral? So it's definitely going to be one to watch, and I'm going to Google real quick the final game. It is going to be in Orlando City at Exploria Stadium. I clicked the wrong link. This is real time, folks. Real time. It is going to be on September 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Orlando City hosting Sacramento Republic FC. So, folks, you'll have to tune into that one. Of course, a couple weeks away here, but still, it's going to be a fun game, and we're excited to hype it up here at Last Word on Soccer. With that said, I have to ask you, Harvey, do you honestly think Sacramento can do it? Can they do the final of cup sets and win the whole shebang and get a spot in CONCACAF Champions League?
I believe they could. They present, for some odd reason, they just present a different look than other teams have. And the funny thing is that they haven't won a game in over a month, and they technically are still on that path because they went to penalties on this one. So, but that's beside the point. Orlando's going to really step it up here with that game. Forget the fact that it's a home. It's, I guess, a team that has done these games on the road, beating the Galaxy on the road was super impressive. The fact that they're gonna get tested again, I'm just glad that we're seeing a story like this of a team that's in USL that is pushing all their eggs into the basket of hopefully winning a trophy. And not just any trophy. This is one of the most storied trophies in the history of American competition, given how long the US Open Cup has been. I'm just happy for the players. That crowd at that sporting game was tremendous. I'm glad that support like that can be displayed. For whatever reason, something like that just prompts the promotion relegation argument for USL and MLS, which, I mean, it's just not going to happen unless you just have a seismic convincing of owners to do, I guess, something promoting good for the sport of MLS, whatever. But as far as them winning the cup, they absolutely could. I can't wait to see how it unfolds. I am a bit bummed out that we have to wait like 5 weeks for the final, but yeah, whatever. It's
such a long wait.
Yeah, I mean, before you know it, I believe we'll have like an international break or whatever or something, I guess, before the World Cup in a month or two after that, but whatever. I just can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good game. I definitely think that Sacramento has the chops to do it, to do the cup set. Orlando, though, I think they are a really good team. And, I mean, it's really going to depend on what type of league play these teams do. So that's going to be interesting, something that we'll have to keep our eyes on the Lions and Sacramento Republic FC for sure. We are going to move on to the roundtable. We do have a couple things here to discuss. So we're going to start with some news that was made official today. Jose Altidor is on loan to Puebla of Liga MX. It's a good deal. Harvey and I were talking before we hopped on and started recording that, you know, he's getting no playing time under Bruce Arena at New England Revolution. So it makes sense for him to get some minutes at a Liga MX side. And those are quality minutes. Liga MX is a good competitive league. I've been covering the women's league for a while, but I've always kind of kept my eyes peeled on the men's league as well. Shout out to my favorite club, Cholos, a big Tijuana fan over here. But I'll be rooting for Jose Altidor on loan to Puebla. So good for him to go get some minutes. He signed, I think I read it was a 3-year contract when he joined New England this past offseason. So just things not going his way right now. It's been absolutely no stranger to anyone on the face of the planet that Jose Altidor has some problems with injury. So he's healthy. He wants his minutes and he's going to go down to Mexico and get them. And I say, absolutely, go down to Mexico and get them. Harvey, if you want to speak on Jose Altidor, please feel free. And then I'm going to pass the torch to you to talk about some debuts for Toronto FC.
Well, just really quickly on the Altidor thing, I just think it's a huge blunder by both New England and Jose Altidor. I'm not sure if it's like bad timing or just it obviously didn't work out, but it's probably something, I guess, more in the fact that, you know, they let go of Adam Buxa, he's gone. They brought in Giacomo Brioni from Juventus to basically be not his replacement, but just take over his minutes. So he's basically down in the depth chart. He's getting no minutes. He's only scored one goal this season for New England, and it just hasn't worked out. When he first joined New England, it was kind of a hope, like, okay, Bruce Arena knows he's a veteran. He can, I guess, he can give a different look. He'll be the Buxa replacement. Offer something, and it just hasn't worked out, and so it's kind of felt out of necessity. And by the way, this loan is only until the end of the year in December, so I mean the end of the year in January. So once December 31st is done and the ball drops at Times Square in New York City, that loan is done unless they negotiate to extend it or make it permanent or whatever. And also one other thing, Jose Altidor is going to turn 33 later this year. So I'm not sure how many more moves he has yet in his career or how many more stops he has left. The World Cup is gone for him. That's just not going to happen. Best of luck to him in Mexico. He does know Spanish. He used to play for Villarreal back in Spain. So I'm sure he'll handle himself there nicely. But yeah, it's another American abroad. If people care about that stuff, that's not a kid 20 years or younger or under 23. But I just want to see. I just hope it works out, girlfriend. That's all. That's all.
Good stuff, Harvey. Completely agree. Jozy Altidore, one of the more likable players, I think, that has been in the ranks of U.S. soccer for sure. And then anytime I get to blame things on Bruce Arena, I'm going to. So I'm going to also blame this on Bruce Arena. But we had some debuts for Toronto FC recently. I'm going to make you talk about it because I cannot say the one person's name. So that is all on you, sir.
Well, I'll just break it down because I thought it was an electric debut for both Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi in what was their 4-0 whooping of Charlotte FC. It was essentially a dream debut. You had Bernardeschi scoring and assisting. He assisted Michael Bradley on a beautiful goal, kind of like a backhand, crossed it up. Saved up for Bradley, and Lorenzo Insigne's back heel for Bradley on the fourth goal is phenomenal. This is the type of stuff that you can kind of expect when Toronto FC rolls into your town. Now, that is leveled off by the fact that they lost the Canadian Championship to Vancouver. Shout out to Vancouver, their first trophy since 2015 of any sort. And I believe that puts them in the CONCACAF Champions League for next season, I believe. If memory serves me right, I'm not sure if that goes in. I believe it does. Whatever, I digress. But Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi are going to give teams headaches just because of their on-field communication and their on-field connection. And so I'm excited to see what they do. Given the horrible start by Toronto, it's not going to be easier for them. They go to New England on the weekend, which is going to be interesting. And they then go to Nashville afterwards, ahead of the All-Star break. So this is a team that is trying to make the playoffs. They are somehow 6 points back of Cincinnati for the final playoff spot, despite being 13th in the East. Despite being 4 points ahead of DC United, despite DC United having 2 games in hand. So, and despite the fact that Toronto has conceded the most goals in MLS, the third most in MLS, the most goals in the Eastern Conference. Only San Jose and Sporting Kansas City have conceded more, which is not shocking. But if you're neutral, try to watch these games as much as possible with them playing because they are tremendous. And listen, best of luck to the opposing defenses. And maybe, just maybe, Bob Bradley has something up his sleeve to get this team kicking in the right direction again. But who knows? This is why you watch. So it will be interesting to see how they carry on with it.
I always forget that Bob Bradley is coaching in Toronto FC. And then I remembered when Seattle played them a couple weeks ago and Seattle won. And I was waiting for Brian Schmetzer to make his "I'm feeling better than Bob" comment. And then he didn't. And I was so sad. But good stuff there, Harvey. Yeah, definitely two players to keep an eye out for. Lots of big transfers this past summer. But the big names, that they are not just coming to MLS, they are also coming to NWSL ownership groups. How about that segue? Eli Manning, a beloved quarterback for your New York Giants, Harvey. First off, let me just say this thing before we get into this. Eli Manning is the better of the Manning brothers because he has 2 rings and Peyton has 1. That's all I'm going to say about that. And we're going to move. I see the look you're giving me. And I don't know. I've always, Eli Manning just seems like so likable to me. I don't know. But Eli Manning and Sue Bird. Sue Bird is a native of the New York area. They are investing in the ownership group of Gotham FC, and they are the team is being valued. And this ownership or this investment is being valued at $40 million. And that's huge because in recent investments from the Washington Spirit, it was valued at $35 million. So this breaks that, quote unquote record, if you will. And that's a big deal for, this club. I mean, they've had, think about where they came from. I mean, from, Sam Kerr talking about how the facilities were just, downright shameful and, playing on, high school and college fields to now they're playing at Red Bull Arena. They got a pretty slick new rebrand. Their on-field product is still a little iffy, but they got Yale Averbush West as a GM. They do have a very good head coach in Scott Parkinson. And now they're getting good legitimate investments from two ginormous names. Sue Bird retiring from the WNBA after this season. Eli Manning, of course, legend for the New York Giants. I mean, come on, that's pretty amazing. Harvey, this is your local team, and these are two local people. I mean, it's just from like even 3 years ago to now, just the change from Sky Blue FC to Gotham FC and just everything. It has been just absolutely remarkable. Any thoughts on this new ownership group?
My favorite part, I guess, is that it is local legends investing in a local club. Listen, Eli Manning is not from New York, but he is one of the greatest players to ever play for New York sports ever. I have his jersey in my closet. That is the greatest, arguably the greatest quarterback in franchise history. And of course, Sue Bird investing in this club as well is brilliant as well. You mentioned it. Their on-field product is, it's not up to speed, I guess. If you want, they do have some aging veterans, and they're trying to blend some youth as well. But besides that, their rebrand has gone well. Fans are going into the games. I've yet to see a Red Bulls Gotham day-night doubleheader where they're both playing games on the same night. Once that happens, that'll be tremendous. But yeah, it's just it's a really cool thing to see. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, there's other athletes investing in NWSL clubs as well. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but there are there's more of that happening. And listen, with what's going to happen with that ESPN NWSL documentary that got pushed to a later date, we kind of need something like this, where we just need like good vibes, because the stuff that's going to come out of the documentary is not going to be pretty. So I'm glad that we at least have more investments into ownership group that can invest in whether it's facilities, youth, growing the youth academies, just growing the on-field product, growing the social media movement of the teams, and any marketing and PR brand as well. That's always a huge bonus. So I'm glad that this stuff is being done. I'm glad that I'm going to be able to see it. The games are cool. There's not a bad seat in the House of Rebel Arena when you get to see these games. So check it out. And, of course, hopefully more of these happen throughout the season or beyond. So this is a good thing going.
Yeah, just to add some context there for you, Harvey, in recent years, Kevin Durant and Carly Lloyd have invested in Gotham. James Harden has invested in the Houston Dash and Houston Dynamo. Just off the top of my head, Sarah Spain, a personality at ESPN, invested in a group with the Chicago Red Stars. Chelsea Bush, Jenna Bush Hager, they invested in Washington Spirit. I mean, there has just been so many incredible, and then Angel City has like literally every investor under the sun. But there have been some really incredible investments in the National Women's Soccer League. And hopefully that will just continue to grow because it's a great product, as you and I both know. And it's only going to continue to grow in a more positive way, which is super, super awesome. So ladies and gentlemen, we are going to move to pick'ems. We have two games on the list here. Not a lot of super exciting games this weekend, so we pretty much just picked the nationally televised games. So we are recording this on Thursday night, but you're probably listening to this on Friday. So speaking as if it were Friday, tonight, it's a late game for us East Coast folks, 11 p.m. Eastern time. On FS1 is LAFC versus the Seattle Sounders. Listen, Seattle, they went through a rough patch. They lost three in a row. Who did they just beat? They bounced back against somebody, and I'm blanking on who they just beat. Gosh, I don't even remember, but they bounced back and they got a win. And I remember it was against a good opponent too. So as I look that up, Harvey, who do you have and why?
I'm going to go with 2-1 LAFC. Raul Ruiz Diaz is expected to be in this game. So that's going to be a real big bonus for Seattle because they desperately need him. But LAFC is just on fire at the moment. Three straight wins, 4 out of 5. Not that they need this game, but they could use it just to build up that support shit cushion. Austin FC is on their heels, but they kind of slowed down a bit. And the fact that Gareth Bale scored against Sporting Kansas City, he'll probably start this game alongside Vela. Chicho, what is his last name? I apologize. It comes to me. Chicho Arango. Cristiano Arango can't stop scoring. Another goal last game and an assist. He's been balling. He's got 9 goals on the year. Goals in 3 straight games, 4 out of 5. 5 out of 6. He's been on the roll. So I'm going to go LAFC 2, Seattle 1. And honestly, I would be a bit worried if I'm a Seattle Sounders fan because they are slipping, low-key slipping. They are 9th. They are 2 points back of Nashville for a playoff spot. They do have a game in hand, but they've already got 10 losses on the year. They need this bad. But I think LAFC is just too strong at the moment. So I'll go LAFC 2-1.
If Dan was here, he would call me a homer. I'm not going to say Seattle wins, but Seattle knows Greg Vanney. Brian Schmetzer knows Greg Vanney, and Brian Schmetzer has had Greg Vanney's number a couple times. So I'm going to say this is going to be a very gritty, very chaotic 2-2 draw. I would love to be proven wrong and see Seattle get 3 points. I don't think that's going to happen. I could see LAFC getting 3 points, but I think Seattle is going to be coming off of a lot of confidence coming off of that Colorado win, especially because, listen, I'm not going to get into this too much, but the Kellen Rowe second yellow card was absolutely ridiculous. So they're going to be coming off of a lot of confidence coming off a win with only 10 men on the pitch. So we will see what happens. The next game we have on the schedule on Saturday, July 30th. Oh my God, Harvey, it's almost August. What is happening? This game is going to be at 3 p.m. on ABC. We've got, oh my gosh, excuse me, the Minnesota United against the Portland Timbers. And Harvey, as you know, as a Seattle Sounder person, I can absolutely, without any doubt, never, ever, 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 ever pick Portland Timbers. So I'm going to go with Minnesota United with a 2-0 blanking of the Portland Timbers, which will certainly help Seattle on the standings.
Yeah, no, it's one of the low-key things that's happening in MLS is that Minnesota is in third place in the West. They are unbeaten in their last 6 league games. If you want to include the Everton humbling, fine, 7 games unbeaten. But one thing that's come to the fore is that Emmanuel Reynoso is becoming an MVP candidate. He's got 56 passes that break defensive lines. And for me, he is one of the true ballers in this league. He's still only 26, which is crazy, but 9 goals, 3 assists in the league so far. A true stalwart for Minnesota United. And the Timbers, while they have gone a decent run as well, I just don't think they'll have the answers for this game. I'm going to go Minnesota 3, Portland 1. And I just think Minnesota carries on with that good run.
Harvey, was I calling them the Thorns?
I'm not even sure, but...
I might have called them the Thorns. It's the Timbers. If I did, I'm sorry, folks. It's been... There's so much women's soccer happening right now, so that's where my mind immediately goes to. But yeah, both of us picking Minnesota United over the Portland Timbers. The Timbers, the Timbers, the Timbers. Okay, so we are going to move on to our last words. Harvey, I'm going to toss it to you. Please tell us where the fine folks of this podcast listening can find you on Twitter, and then tell us what your last words are, sir.
Sir Harvey Cruz on Twitter, Sir Harvey Cruz on Instagram. This is going to be my last words, are going to be an ode to our good buddy Jamie Rook, who is in England, who, if you haven't checked out his last few tweets, he pulled out predictions. Why? Because this weekend, the championship is back. The second division of English football is back. I, for one, am excited. It's one of my favorite leagues to tune into. It's going to happen on Friday. Huddersfield hosts Burnley. A real nice kickoff, curtain raiser to the season. Jamie has his predictions. He has West Brom and Sheffield United as the two teams that are going to be automatically promoted. I'm going to go with also with West Brom and Sheffield United, but I will go with Middlesbrough as my third team to be promoted when they win the playoff final. If you want like a real dark horse, you can go with Hull City, maybe QPR, maybe Millwall. Millwall had a good start last season, maybe Luton Town as well. And of course, because we won't be talking to you fine folks at the weekend, please, please, please check out the other leagues that will be starting as well. Germany's DFB Pokal will be starting. The Scottish Premiership will be starting. And on Sunday, that's right, on Sunday, we will have, if I can find it here, we will have Super Cups. The French Super Cup will be on. Just, it's all coming together, Rachel. Once the page turns to August, all the club competitions will be back. You'll never want to leave the house. You'll be watching the Premier League and Serie A and La Liga. It'll be all coming to the fore.
Good stuff, my friend. I am going to talk to the fine folks listening first and foremost about our two super duper sponsors. We want to thank our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Go ahead and go get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And then, Harvey, my friend, are you tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas? Are you looking for a unique, completely custom kit for your youth club, your Sunday league squad, adult, or even pro team? Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price with the motto, any design you want. Seriously, let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. So thank you to them. I am on Twitter at, oh my gosh, at Rachel Krieger. And then I'm also keeping it close to our friend Jamie Rook because, ladies and gentlemen, on Sunday, it is the UEFA Women's Euro Final. And for the 9th time, 9 times, they have won this tournament 8 times. Germany is going to be in the final. They had a streak of 8, or I think it was like 7 wins. Maybe it was the 8. And then the Dutch won in 2017. Well, guess who's coaching the Lionesses of England? Serena Wiegman, who coached that 2017 Dutch team. Can she win it again in 2022? What she has done with that squad is just absolutely incredible. Moving around Millie Bright's position, she made Leah Williamson captain at only 25 years old. Just the list goes on and on. And I mean, Ella Toon and Alessia Russo. If y'all have not seen Alessia Russo's goal in the semifinal, the audacity to back heel in the box and nutmeg Hedvig Lidvall, who is one of the better goalkeepers on the international stage for Sweden. Oh, just absolutely filthy. England completely routed Sweden to get to that final, and then Germany beat France 2-1. Alexandra Popp with an amazing tournament so far. She has 6 goals in 5 games. She has scored in every single game so far. England's going to have a really tough time containing her. And Germany should be getting back Clara Buhl. She had missed out on the semifinal due to a positive COVID test. So there is a nice gap of space before that final on Sunday. I'll be covering it over at Equalizer Soccer. Jamie, I know he's going to be pulling for England. I'm okay if either team wins. I think it would be nice to see England win at home. Football coming home for the women would be pretty, and to see Serena Wiegman do it 2 years in a row for 2 different teams would be pretty remarkable. She is, without a doubt, in my opinion, the best women's football coach on the international stage. So a big credit to her. She's a wonderful coach. That game is going to be on ESPN at 12 p.m. noon Eastern time. So if you're on the Pacific Coast, get up early for that at 9 a.m. Eastern time. So don't miss out on that. It's going to be a really great game. England versus Germany in the UEFA Women's Euro competition. But that is going to do it for us. I am Rachel Kerr. That is Harvey Cruz. Thank you again to Last Word on Sports, Inc. Check out all of our written content at lastwordonsports.com / soccer. And then don't forget to watch all of these great games coming up. Thank you again to Roughneck Scarves, Icarus FC, Beautiful Game Network, Last Word Inc. And that'll do it for us tonight. And we will see y'all next time.